ever get the feeling that like history is repeating itself? Like
Yeah.
we're diving into Northern Ireland in this
Yeah.
deep dive,
Okay.
focusing on 1969 to 1972. And it's like, you know, when you see those pictures of like families and everyone's smiling,
We just get this.
you can kind of tell something's off.
Yeah, something's off. Like, are they really happy?
Exactly. So that's what we're looking at here. But
Yeah.
with Northern Ireland, and we've got all this
Yeah,
research,
okay.
academic papers, firsthand accounts,
Wow.
even some declassified government reports.
Really?
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. And they all say the same thing. Northern Ireland in the late 60s,
Yeah.
total powder keg.
Just waiting for a spark.
Exactly.
And that spark, often, a lot of historians argue that it was this seemingly harmless event, just a parade.
Okay, so before we get to the parade, paint me a picture of Northern Ireland pre-1969.
Okay, so you've got a deeply divided society, and I mean deeply divided.
Along sectarian lines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Protestant majority, Catholic minority,
Right.
and there's a long history of discrimination against Catholics. Housing, jobs, even basic voting rights. The system heavily favored one side over the other.
Okay, so that's the backdrop.
Yeah.
Then we have Terence O'Neill, Prime Minister at the time,
Right.
unionist. Right. Believed in Northern Ireland staying part of the UK,
Yeah.
but he also saw that things needed to change a little.
He did. He recognized that the status quo wasn't sustainable.
Right.
Tried to push through some reforms, you know.
Trying to be a little more fair.
Exactly. Level the playing field, you know. Give Catholics a fairer
So
shake.
how'd that go over?
Well, some people, you know, they saw it as a good first step, a sign that things might actually change for the better.
Regretful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, especially in his own Unionist Party, they saw it as a betrayal,
Oh,
a
wow.
slippery slope towards a united Ireland.
Which, of course, they did not want to like.
Absolutely not. They saw it as a threat to their whole identity.
So he's stuck. Right.
Totally. Between a rock and a hard place.
And in the end, he couldn't make it work.
He couldn't please anyone.
Had to resign.
1969, O'Neill's out.
And this is where James Chichester Clark steps in.
Into this, like you said, powder keg of a situation.
Right into the fire.
And it's not just the political situation that's tense. You've got the civil rights movement gaining momentum.
Like the one in America.
Exactly. Inspired by it. Lots of protests demanding equal rights for Catholics.
And how are those protests being received by the Protestant community?
With a lot of fear and anger, to be honest.
Makes sense, I guess. It's change, and change can be scary.
It is. And for a lot of Protestants, they saw it as this threat
Right.
to their own British identity.
So it's this powder keg, and then August 1969,
The Apprentice Boys March.
that's the parade.
It is. Every year, they hold this march in Derry, commemorating a historic siege.
And the Apprentice Boys, they're.
Protestant fraternal organization.
Okay. So on the surface, a parade, it's not that big of a deal.
You would think,
Right. But in this context.
in the context of Northern Ireland,
Yeah.
in a city like Derry, where
Yeah.
Catholics were the majority,
Right.
it was a powder keg waiting to blow.
And nobody saw this coming.
Oh, people saw it coming. Nationalist leaders, they were warning about it.
Really?
Even the Irish government itself, they urged Chichester Clark, ban the march. He didn't, allowed it to go ahead.
So what happened?
Well, pretty much what everyone feared. The march itself,
Yeah.
it became a flashpoint. Stones, insults, it escalated so quickly,
Yeah.
full-blown riots.
Wow, this wasn't just a scuffle though, right?
Oh no, this was major.
Yeah.
Barricades going up in the Bogside, a Catholic neighborhood.
Barricades.
Yeah, and petrol bombs being
And
thrown,
the police.
the RUC. They resorted to firing CS gas into crowds.
Intense.
And then, to make matters worse, they called in the B Specials,
Who are the B specials?
reserve police force, seen by a lot of Catholics as being openly hostile towards them.
So, not a great idea to call them in.
Not a great idea.
Yeah.
Really poured gasoline on the fire.
And this is the Battle of the Bogside that we hear about.
That's the one. 3 days of intense rioting
Yeah.
changed everything in Northern Ireland
And this is important
because
because.
it showed that the Northern Ireland government,
Yeah.
they couldn't control the situation.
It was too big for them.
Exactly. And it also, for the first time, really brought the Republic of Ireland into the picture.
Because they couldn't just sit back and watch this happen.
Well, Jack Lynch, he was the Taoiseach of Ireland at the time.
Okay.
He gives this televised address, and let me tell you,
Yeah.
it sent shockwaves.
What did he say?
He condemned the violence, of course, but then he says that the Irish government,
Yeah.
They couldn't just stand by.
While this was happening.
While innocent people were being hurt.
Which, I'm guessing, didn't go over well with the unionists.
You could say that again. They saw it as interference, a step towards a united Ireland.
So what did Lynch do? Did he send in troops?
He sent troops to the border.
Okay.
But he stopped short of actually sending them into Northern Ireland.
A delicate balance.
A tightrope walk.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to appease nationalists who wanted action.
Mm-hmm.
But also trying to avoid a full-blown international crisis.
Right, right. But even that, even sending troops to the border, that was a big deal.
Huge.
And it forced the British government's hand.
They had to act.
They had to send in their own troops.
And that's a whole other can of worms.
He does.
Because at first, the British Army.
Yeah.
They were welcomed by many in the Catholic community.
Really? They were happy to see them.
They saw them as a neutral force.
There to protect the home.
Exactly. Uh-huh. From the RUC, from the B specials.
Wow. So it was almost like a sense of relief.
For a very short time, yes.
Short-lived.
Very.
Very. And why is that? What happened?
Well, that's a story for another time. It's wild, right?
Yeah.
They come in wanting to help.
Right.
But it just makes things so much more complicated.
Yeah, because it wasn't just about the soldiers themselves, right?
Right, right.
It's the whole, like, chain reaction that their arrival set off.
Exactly. It's like a domino effect.
Okay, so before we get too deep into that, let's talk about the Hunt Report.
Okay.
Because this comes out just a few months after the Battle of the Bogside.
Right, right.
And it's this big investigation into policing in Northern Ireland. And you'd think, okay, this is it.
Right, like a turning point.
Exactly. This is going to fix things.
Right.
But of course it doesn't.
It didn't.
So tell me about this report. What did it say?
Well, it basically confirmed what a lot of Catholics have been saying all along.
Which is?
That the RUC was part of the problem.
Meaning?
Meaning they weren't exactly known for being impartial.
Okay, let's just say they weren't exactly sensitive to the needs of the Catholic community.
Let's just say that.
Right. Okay. So the Hunt Report, it calls for some pretty big changes.
Oh, yeah. Big time reforms.
Mm-hmm.
Disband the B specials entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Disarm the RUC.
Really? Big changes. And the goal was to
create a police force that actually served everyone.
Makes sense. But I'm guessing that didn't go over so well with everyone.
You can say that again. The loyalists.
They were furious. I bet.
Especially about disbanding the B specials.
Because they saw them as protectors.
Exactly. Defenders of their community.
And now all of a sudden it's like the government is saying, nope, we're taking that away.
And not just that, but disarming the RUC.
Yeah.
I mean, to them, that felt like surrendering.
To the people they saw as a threat.
Exactly. And that's when you start to see the rise of the loyalist paramilitary groups, like the UDA.
Ulster Store Defense Associates.
That's the one. And within the UDA, you had the Ulster Freedom Fighters, or UFF.
And they were not about peaceful protest, right?
Not exactly known for their diplomacy. The UFF, they were brutal.
So you've got this escalation on both sides.
Right.
The IRA sees the British Army, and they're like, nope, you're an occupying force.
Mm-hmm. They step up their recruitment, their activities.
And the loyalists are feeling threatened, abandoned even.
And they're arming up, forming groups like the UDA and the UFF.
And stuck in the middle.
Ordinary people. Families, shopkeepers, yeah. Just trying to live their lives.
It's easy to forget about them when we talk about this.
It is.
But they're the ones who suffer the most, right?
Absolutely. Families forced to flee their homes, communities torn apart, a constant sense of fear.
Yeah, the human cost is immeasurable.
It really is. And as if things weren't bad enough, the IRA itself splits.
Oh, right. This is a big deal, isn't it?
Huge. December 1969, just a few months after the Battle of the Bogside.
Wow, it's like everything is happening at once.
It really is. And this isn't just a minor disagreement. This is a fundamental divide
over
the future of the Republican movement.
Okay, so who are the main players in this split? What are their goals?
So on one side, you've got the official IRA, or OIRA.
Okay.
And they're moving towards a more Marxist ideology.
Interesting. So they're thinking more about class struggle.
Exactly. Social justice, workers' rights. They see their role as more political than military.
And the other side?
The provisional IRA, or PIRA. They come from the more militant ranks, mostly in Belfast.
And their goal?
A united Ireland. And they're willing to use whatever means necessary to achieve it.
So while the OIRA is talking about class struggle, the PIRA is saying, we're going to fight for a united Ireland no matter what.
Basically.
Wow. And as we move into the 1970s, it's the PIRA that really takes center stage.
Yeah, it became the face of the conflict.
Yeah.
Their campaign of bombings and shootings, It escalates dramatically.
And Northern Ireland is just like pulled deeper and deeper into this cycle of violence.
And deeper, deeper.
It's like watching a car crash in slow motion.
It is.
You know it's going to be bad, but you can't look away.
And in the middle of all this, you've got Chichester Clark trying to hold it all together.
And it's just too much.
It was too much for anyone. He resigns in March of 1971.
And that's where Brian Faulkner comes in.
Into this absolute mess.
Trying to salvage a sinking ship.
Exactly. And Faulkner, he decides to try something drastic. A real gamble. Internment without trial.
So Faulkner's got his work cut out for him.
Oh, yeah. Talk about a tough job.
Inheriting this, well, this mess.
Trying to keep everyone happy.
Which is impossible, right?
Pretty much.
Because you've got the moderate nationalists. They want reform.
Right.
But then you've got the IRA, and they're gaining more and more power.
And they're not afraid to use it.
So what does Faulkner do?
He cracks down.
On the IRA.
Yeah, he figures that's the only way.
To regain control.
Exactly.
But that's a risky move, isn't it?
Oh, incredibly risky.
Because it alienates a lot of people.
And it leads to one of the most controversial policies of the Troubles.
Which is?
Internment without trial.
Okay, tell me about that.
So, August 1971.
Okay.
They introduced this policy, and the idea is,
yeah,
round up suspected IRA members.
Okay.
Get them off the streets.
Disrupt their operations.
Exactly. Sounds good on paper.
Right. But how it played out,
well, yeah,
it was a disaster.
How so?
They only targeted Catholics.
What?
Yeah. In those first few days, hundreds of Catholics arrested.
Wow.
Not a single Protestant.
Seriously. That's unbelievable.
It was a huge mistake.
I bet. Talk about alienating the Catholic community.
Exactly. It just confirmed their worst fears.
That the system was rigged against them.
Exactly.
And that the British government, they weren't really interested in fairness.
No, it was like they were taking sides.
And of course, the IRA, they used this to their advantage.
A propaganda gift.
Yeah. See? We told you the British government can't be trusted.
Exactly.
It's like they unintentionally made the IRA stronger.
And to make matters worse, the intelligence they were using, outdated.
Meaning?
They were arresting people who weren't even involved in the IRA anymore.
Oh, no.
Or people who had never been involved.
So it was both unfair and ineffective.
The worst of both worlds.
Unbelievable.
And of course, the people they really wanted to catch.
The IRA leaders.
They were long gone. So they knew this was coming.
They had their ear to the ground.
And the backlash to internment, it must have been huge.
Oh, yeah. Protests everywhere.
What kind of protests?
Strikes, demonstrations.
People were angry.
And a lot of young Catholics, they saw this and they thought, the IRA, they're the only ones fighting for us.
So it backfired in a big way.
Spectacular.
And it's in this context, right?
Yeah.
This atmosphere of anger, mistrust.
That Bloody Sunday happens.
Bloody Sunday, January 30th, 1972.
A civil rights march in Derry.
Protesting internment.
And it descends into chaos.
British soldiers fire on unarmed civilians.
14 people dead.
14.
Men, women.
Wow.
Just walking down the street.
And the soldiers just open fire.
It's a day that's seared into the memory of everyone who lived through it.
I can't even imagine.
And the impact, it was huge.
Well, yeah. It showed the world that the British government, they weren't in control.
And that they were willing to use deadly force against unarmed civilians.
Did they ever explain why the soldiers fired?
There was an inquiry years later.
Hmm.
They said the shootings were unjustified.
Unjustified. Meaning?
The people who were killed, they weren't a threat.
So the soldiers just shot them.
That's what the inquiry concluded.
Wow.
Bloody Sunday. It changed everything.
Yeah, it destroyed any trust that was left.
Made a peaceful solution seem impossible.
And it led to even more violence.
The spiral just kept going.
So what happened next?
Well, the British government, they had to do something.
Right.
They couldn't just ignore this.
So they suspended the Northern Ireland Parliament.
At Stormont, yeah.
Direct rule from London.
March of 1972.
The end of an era.
It really was.
So here we are. At the end of our deep dive.
A lot to unpack.
We've covered a lot of ground, but it feels important.
Absolutely.
To understand how we got here.
How Northern Ireland went from this hopeful moment in the 60s.
With O'Neill's reforms to the brink of chaos.
And beyond.
Because it didn't stop there, did it?
No, the violence continued for decades.
So what can we learn from all of this?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Because we see these kinds of divisions all over the world.
It's a reminder that peace is fragile.
And that we have to keep talking to each other.
Even when it's hard.
Especially when it's hard.
Because the alternative
is unthinkable.
Exactly.
Well, on that note,
yeah.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into this pivotal moment in history.
Thanks for having me.
It's been heavy.
It is heavy.
But important.
Absolutely.
And we hope you'll join us next time.
We'll be back.
For another deep dive
into the archives.